Hi, everyone, and welcome to another Monday show. I hope you've all had a good weekend, wherever you are and whatever you've been doing. I have to say, I've had a particularly good Easter because on Good Friday, I became a grandfather again, and I welcomed my little granddaughter into the world. So I've had a brilliant weekend. And because of that, that's why there's not been my usual output. As I'm sure everyone understands, family comes first. And, you know, it's important that we do give time to those immediately around us for reasons we're going to talk about, actually, because the family unit is probably the strongest buttress we have against so much of the evil that infests this world. So that's just to give you that little bit of news. I obviously want to also thank our sponsors, Quantum Hypno, link below, quantumhypno.co.uk. Do go and check them out. Support us. You know, in the alternative media, if we don't support each other, we're in trouble. So Quantum Hypno support me. You support them. Go and click this one. Right. We've got a really great guest. I'm really looking forward to this chat because so much of the stuff we talk about touches on the central topic which we are going to talk about. And that is essentially, we're going to chat about the whole transhumanist agenda, which, you know, unless you've been asleep for the past, you know, several years, you won't have missed it. There's a lot of chat about it. And I can't think of anyone I would rather talk to about it than, as I say, our special guest this evening. And her name is Laura Aboli. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, David. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolute pleasure to have you, Laura, on the show. Thanks for coming along and talking to us about a topic which, you know, we talk about various aspects of transhumanism. And certainly, I don't know about you, but from 2020, it seems to be really on radar. So can I start off? I'll ask the obvious question. Laura, what is transhumanism?
Transhumanism is an ideology that's based on the belief that we are somehow a half-baked work-in-progress species. And they believe that unless we merge with technology, we will simply not survive the future. That's kind of the main stance. Now, added to that is the fact that they see us only as these materialistic beings. They don't think that we have a soul. They don't believe there is a spiritual realm. They don't believe in God. And so we are what they sometimes refer to as ape-brained sacks of meat. That's how they sometimes refer to humans. Yeah. So you can imagine with such a reductionist and frankly insulting view of who we are, their plans are, in my opinion, rather horrific, because really they don't not only speak of transhumanism, but posthumanism, which is the world posthumans. In other words, they seek to pretty much eradicate us as we are, as we know ourselves.
Well, that's right, because they look upon us as a kind of a plague, or, you know, a pestilence on the earth. Hence, you get a lot of people like Bill Gates and others talking about the need to reduce our numbers from the theoretical 8 billion. Theoretic, I mean, who knows, Laura, because I've heard you talk about this. Because actually, you're one of the first people, and I really admire this, who challenges back on the essence of population. I mean, how do we know the population numbers are right, Laura?
Well, we don't, and this is the point. Mm. And actually, David, it goes back to the fact that we are having to face that we live in a matrix where pretty much everything that we have been told is a lie. And yeah. So people really are beginning to wake up to this notion. And the COVID pandemic was quite a frightening, shakeup, where people understood that a lot of the institutions that we had come to trust historically, we just cannot trust anymore. And that a lot of the things that we were being told were lies. And so why should we then not begin to question other things? And when you see that the people at the top and these globalists are very set in this depopulation agenda, you wonder whether actually the population figures are true. And it's something that's been in my head for a long time. And I recently stumbled upon someone that had simply taken, I believe it was India. He just looked at India and he'd taken the figures for all the major cities in India, taking the population figures, added them up. And he said, there's no way that the rest of the country is full of all of these other people to reach the 1.6 billion, I think, there is now supposedly in India. So the point is, and I haven't actually had the time to do this exercise country per country, but the point is, can we actually trust anything that we've been told when we are seeing time after time that they lied to us through their teeth? This is the question.
And I think, Laura, the thing about COVID in particular was, you know, in one way, it was bad, obviously, this massive, you know, tyrannical power grab. But in another way, it's been good because so many of us, I think, have woken up and challenged back on every front. You know, I think it's encouraged critical thinking from people who maybe didn't think that critically before. I'd include myself, you know, up until 2020. I more or less went with some of the stuff. I have to tell you, Laura, I don't go with any of the stuff now. Nothing. You know, I verify everything that I'm told. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Globes, what the population stats they give us are misleading, because it's always to follow a narrative. I mean, they're always pushing narrative on us, aren't they? I mean, that's the thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that you're right. What you just said, you now question everything and you try to get to the bottom of things and do your own research or reading. And that's how really it should always be, right? Why should we take things at face value? Who said that we could have ever trusted governments or power elites? Never in the history of humanity have they been trustworthy. So I don't know what made us think we could trust them now, right? That makes no sense whatsoever.
You're right. you're right. But so many, so a lot of us did, and it's blind faith and it's misplaced faith. But I think such was their overreach, Laura, over the last several years that, you know, it's lit a fire amongst, I think, our community and people like yourself speaking out and others. You know, I think we have a captive. I mean, I know there'll be people watching this, you know, tonight, and they will be like, either they will have been in, I guess, in my shoes anyway. I mean, when did you first go down rabbit holes of challenging things, can I ask, Laura?
Well, for me, it was back in 2012 when something in my own personal life shook me really badly. Mm-hmm. And it started just making myself question a lot of things about my own life, you know, and that one thing led to another. And I started asking myself some rather fundamental questions that I believe everybody should ask themselves at some point in life, which is, you know, who am I? Why are we here? Where are we going? What's the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? What is my purpose in life? Mm. So all of these very metaphysical, transcendental questions came to me at that point of great change in my own personal life. And that led to something else. That led to trying to understand, well, what is really making the world go round, or who and how? And why? And why is it that suddenly everybody is walking in this direction? Or why is it that suddenly the narrative is plagued by one message? You know, all of these things, you know, one thing led to another. I kept going down rabbit hole somewhere horrific in nature.
Oh, I know.
And here we are 10, 12 years later. I think that at the beginning of the pandemic, I was just perhaps in a better place to figure out what was happening ahead of time. And that's why I started to write and talk.
Yeah. It is fascinating, because once you go down a rabbit hole, as you say, then you go down like a million. I've been down a million rabbit holes. But the thing is, you know, truth is not to be found in like the mainstream media or by what governments tell us or what these supranational organizations like the United Nations, World Health Organizations tell us. I mean, I think they're the antithesis of truth, Laura. Yeah. You know, I almost take a view, if they tell me such and such, I want to believe the opposite. I mean, what's your thought? What's your thoughts on the UN and the WHO, etc.?
Well, don't get me started on these organizations, because what you must understand is they are all executive branches of a megalithic or a rather pyramidal type of power structure. And so they just serve a purpose, and the purpose is to further the agenda, the global agenda. So they're not here because they care about our health. They're not here because they care to keep peace in the world. We have seen how the UN, through the veto power of the US, has stopped any ceasefire in Gaza at the moment. Any normal human being would want that carnage to stop. Yep. And to come to a better understanding or whatever it takes. But but listen, killing children day in, day out is not going to solve anything as far as I can see. So you can tell that a lot of these organizations are really not serving the purpose that they are selling us to be there for, right? And the WHO has really shown its true colors during the pandemic. Yeah. And very worrying is this new pandemic treaty and the amendments to the international health regulations that they're trying to bring about now coming up on May this year. Not to be trusted at all. I think you just said it, if they're saying one thing, the truth is probably the opposite. It's actually a really great way to go about life these days.
Yeah. Well, actually, as you say, I mean, given that you'd sort of started to ask a lot of important questions, you know, sort of 8 years before COVID came along, can I ask you, how did you respond then when it all started to happen? Back end of 2019, first few months of 2020, you know, what was your response to that? Did you think, all right, I see what's happening? Or how were you feeling at that point?
Well, I was extremely surprised that for the first time, probably in history, countries were moving in lockstep. Yeah. You know, In the history of humankind, we have seen always the tensions and the conflicts and the disagreements between the French and the English and the Germans and the Italians and the this and the that. And suddenly, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as if by magic, all countries were moving in lockstep. All countries were doing the same thing. All governments were telling us the same thing. It was extremely suspicious to me from day one. And having looked at people like Bill Gates ahead of time, and who is not a philanthropist, but rather a psychopath, this whole push towards the vaccine made me incredibly worried, very anxious. And I could tell that actually the whole pandemic was just about the vaccine. It was not about a virus. It was not about anything else, but rather pushing this experimental jab on the world's population. So that really set all of my alarm bells on fire. And that's when I started feeling like there was something that I needed to do or had to do. It was almost like an obligation that I had to do something. And all I could think of was start talking and putting out their information for anybody that cared to read what I had to say.
And that wasn't easy, was it? Because in those early days, you know, I mean, for example, this particular show with you is going out on Twitter, on Getter, on Rumble. It's not going out on YouTube or Facebook because those I think these are fascist channels, basically. They're against free speech. And I remember back then, I'm sure you found the same, you know, and on Twitter 1.0 anyway, if you said anything, Laura, to challenge this lockstep narrative, you were either censored, given a strike, or in my case, I was taken off Twitter because I challenged it, you know, for 2 years. So it was hard. So I think was Telegram, was that your channel of choice to spread the word that things weren't as they were saying?
Yeah, I chose Telegram for that reason precisely. I knew that on Instagram or Facebook or I would not have lasted 3 days, I don't think, at the time, because I was putting a lot of information on the vaccines, and that was completely forbidden anywhere. You could not say anything against the vaccines, not even whether you were just questioning them was bad enough for them, and you were censored and your whole history was swiped out. So I thought I'd rather be clever, choose a platform that I thought I could speak on freely, which I have been able to do, I have to say. On Telegram, never have I found any obstacles in putting out there whatever information I thought was useful for people. And so I grew organically. But you have to understand that a lot of these platforms like Facebook, for example, was a CIA initiative. It was called LifeLog. You know, people like to think this silly story of Zuckerberg in his garage coming up with this great stuff.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. That's the story they sell to us, you know, like in the movies. But but a lot of these platforms have governmental agencies behind them, and they were released for a reason, to keep an eye on us, to control the narrative, to gather information on us.
I totally agree. And I do think that, well, we'll talk about Twitter 2.0 in a second, but Twitter 1.0, I believe, was a completely open to government manipulation. In my case, Laura, for my sins, in the summer of 2020, I went to a local garden center. My unspeakable crime was, and I wouldn't wear a mask. I was never going to wear their masks. I went to a garden center, took a selfie, and I tweeted something like, why am I the only person here not wearing a mask? Within 3 hours, the police came to visit me. Police came to visit me to my door. And I live in a very kind of rural environment. And then within about a month, I was removed from Twitter. That didn't happen accidentally. That's the state shutting down dissidents. But Twitter 2.0, now, going back to transhumanism, I mean, I am very conflicted with Elon Musk. He says some things that are okay, but the Neuralink, like, what's that about? How do you read that, Laura?
Yeah, you know, I often get asked about Elon, because I think for many of us, he's a massive question mark. I always say he seems to sometimes say the right thing and do the wrong thing, or vice versa. And so you're left extremely confused. And maybe that's his point. Maybe he wants to confuse us. I don't know. I don't know what his role is. I would be suspicious of anybody that has been able to achieve such amount of influence and money and power, because generally the elites that control the world don't let anybody get that high unless you're going to cooperate with them. And I'm not saying that's the case with Elon. Like I say, he's a bit of a maverick of sorts. Yeah. I'm very much on the fence, you know. When it comes to Neuralink, it's one of those things where he's obviously going to always try to sell that, whether it's him or other technological gadgets that are to be implanted in the human brain. They're always going to sell it to us as a means to help those that have a disability. And, you know, I am not against, nobody is against technology that seeks to help us, right? Especially those that may have had been dealt a difficult hand in life with blindness or deafness or whatever the case may be. My point and my, you know, my fight in putting out information out there is against technology that seeks to transform us completely and to eradicate humanity as we know it, as God created us. That's where I draw the line. It's like, don't count with me.
but you're so right, because it is this fundamental view that they have, that us human beings, we're not good enough as we are. You know, God doesn't make us good enough, but technology will make us better. And I just think, you know, it's evil. I think it's evil, but it's also seductive in some levels, you know. So you, what's wrong with a little chip in your hand, Laura? Well, you know, why complain about that? And before you know where you are, you're being completely controlled. And I think this is what the transhumanists want. But then they don't want us all anyway. I mean, we have our friend, I always think the World Economic Forum, you know, Schwab and the gang, I mean, they're sort of laughable at one level, but they're deeply evil also at another level. And like, as you said earlier, I mean, they look upon us as these kind of, you know, what is it, useless eaters? I think that's the preferred term. I mean, they're anti-human, aren't they? In their everything, actually.
There's a very anti-human agenda at play here. You know, they firstly want to depopulate the planet, so they're trying to blatantly get rid of many of us. And you know, Bill Gates once stood very infamously in front of, I think it was a TED talk, I don't remember. If we do a good job with vaccines, we can reduce the world's population by 15%. And I was left like, did he just say what I heard? Let me rewind. Yeah. Right. So that should make anybody very, very, very worried about those words, because they are true. And what people need to understand is that the people that are really pulling the strings in this world are transhumanists. They do believe in the fact that we are half-baked work in progress, and that they, in their megalomaniac delusions, can actually make us superhumans, or, you know, gods, as they now speak of, in the words of Yuval Noah Harari, homo deus. Yeah. They're trying to seduce people. And this is all part of that seduction. It's marketing. You know, it's how do we get to people, right? And firstly, and it's part of a lot, I've been saying this for a long time, partly they first need to sort of break us as humans. They need to erode and destroy everything that makes us strong, happy, independent humans, right? You need to debilitate us, demoralize us, dehumanize us to the point that we would consider becoming something else. Otherwise, why would you? You know, I am none of those things. I'm not demoralized. I'm not weak. I'm not, you know, so there's no way you're going to convince me of taking any sort of technology under the skin. I like the way God created us. I'm quite happy. Yes, I understand that we're not invincible, and that one day we will die. But I think that goes back to understanding the purpose and the meaning of life. This is a journey. It's not meant to last forever. Transhumanists will try to sell you immortality. But what kind of immortality are we talking about? We're talking about a technical synthetic immortality, being part of a grid, right? It's it's not you. It's not an immortal human. No, it's an immortal cyborg. But that's no longer who you are in any case.
And, so, yeah. And as well as they sell us immortality, but actually it's captivity, isn't it? It's captivity. We will be always controlled. I mean, I think they hate the fact that people like you and myself and others can actually, you know, do what we want and say what we want. They despise us for that. Because we're not under their control. We're not in the grid. We're not part of their matrix, you know. But they want that to be the case, don't they, Laura? And one question I had for you was as we're talking today, 1st of April, yesterday, so we talked about this before we came live, was International Trans Visibility Day. I think that's something like that. And of course, this whole transgenderism thing, which at one level is completely ludicrous, because nobody can change gender. It's impossible. But yet it's being taken up by pretty much every government, or many governments anyway, and sold to us as celebratory. So how do you see transgenderism vis-a-vis transhumanism?
Well, it's part of the same agenda. It's a means to get there. Mm-hmm. So what people need to understand is that, first of all, these people have a lot of patience. They know that what they're trying to do, and what they're trying to do, is to create this one world global totalitarian technocracy where they can fully control us, right? Yeah. So that's an extremely ambitious plan that they've been working on for decades, if not centuries, by the way. Yeah. But, you know, if we stand where we are right now and talking about transgenderism is just one more way of eroding at everything that makes us strong, of breaking the fabric of society and make us question the most fundamental notion of human identity, which is our gender, right? Yep. You know, in my famous speech, I said gender ideology is the equivalent of the 2 + 2 = 5 from George Orwell's 1984 dystopian novel. It is. And you think they must be thinking, if we can convince them that there are more than two genders, we can convince them of anything. Yeah. We can get them to do anything, because it is so ludicrous and so ridiculous and so absurd that if we can get enough people to actually start talking about the possibility that maybe there's not two genders, but maybe there's all of these genders, it's like, are you kidding me? Right? Mm-hmm. But that is just another way of messing up with people's psyche to the point that maybe one day they say, yeah, you know, plug me into a machine. I'd rather be half cyborg or full cyborg than who I am. Because guess what? I no longer know who I am. I don't know what being a human is anymore. I don't know whether I'm a man or a woman. I seem to identify with all sorts of weird stuff. So, yeah, make me some sort of superhuman 2.0 plugged into a machine, right? So transgenderism is part of the transhuman agenda. because it gets people to that point, such weak point psychologically, morally, that you might actually accept your own extinction, basically. That's what transhumanism is, to the degree, like Ray Kurzweil speaks of the singularity event. You know, once we get there, and he talks about like 2030, not, 2065, like it's quite an immediate future. He says we won't be able to distinguish between organic and synthetic humans, or between virtual and physical reality. Everything will be a blurred, but to get us there, they need to first break us.
Well, I completely agree. And the other way that they do that, I think, and I think this is very much in parallel to the transgenderism thing. As I said, Laura, over the weekend there, I became a granddad again. I've got a little granddaughter born on Good Friday, which was really nice. And so I've spent the last 3 days, as I always do, with my extended family. And you realize that the family unit is so critical. It's our biggest defense against them, I think. The love within a family, but then they've been very busy doing all they can to destroy the family unit, to destroy the idea of mother and father, and kids. Yeah. They don't want that. So how do you sort of see that attack on the family feeding into the whole general sort of making us feel worthless agenda that they've got?
Well, I, when you start attacking the most fundamental pillar of any person's strength, will to fight for something, purpose, is family. Yes. It really is family. We are social beings. We like living in community, and family within that is the most important structure that we have. It is the one thing that keeps us on track. It gives us a sense of strength. It gives us direction. It gives us help when we need it, right? It makes us want to fight for the right things, fight for those we love. When you break that, it means that you've created an entire generation, actually, because as we know, the nuclear family has been under attack, like you rightly have said. And so we now have an epidemic of broken families and divorce and what have you. And so the less you have of that anchor in your life, you're like a boat with no sail, no anchor, and no compass. You know, the winds will come and you will blow away in any direction. It's very easy to get lost in life, down the wrong paths, when you don't have the most important pillar in your life, and that is family. That is the nuclear family.
And this
is why they've attacked it so consistently for the last few decades, very consistently. Once again, they need to break us to get us to the point of accepting our own extinction. That's a tough job to do to an intelligent species as we are. And so how do we get there? We need to attack at every angle that is actually giving those humans the strength that we would need to counteract any narrative, to say no, right?
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And the other thing they like to do, I think, is, and it's become so obvious, Laura, in the past 4 years anyway, fear. Fear is keep people fearful, keep them scared, worried. And that's what I think they've started it with COVID. You know, they ran it into Ukraine. They've run it into Gaza. They keep running this. There's always something to worry about. And then some people at any rate, whenever they get scared, they turn to authority. And that's the last place, in my opinion, you should be looking to when you're scared. Do not go to authority, because it's not going to end well. But do you think it's been all deliberate, all this fear we've had since COVID in the last 4 years?
Yes, absolutely, without a question of a doubt. Fear is one of their main tools of control. Yeah. Because you need to understand that the main point is to control our perception. There's too many of us and too few of them. And so the only way that they can actually get us to do what they want us to do is by controlling our perception of reality, right? You know, let's feed this narrative so that people freak out and walk this way, right? Yeah. Or that people freak out and accept this jab, or that people freak out. Also, we know that fear actually makes your brain incapable of critical thinking. So the more fearful we are, the less we're going to challenge the narrative, the less we're going to not comply with whatever we are told. On the contrary, you know, they make us so fearful. So they come and say, this is the solution, follow me. And everybody follows, because they are already in a point, in a mental state of not being able to think for themselves. So fear is number one tool in their box. They've been using it forever, and this is why there's always a constant wars. Now it's a climate crisis or no, they've changed the name now. Excuse me. It's now called climate emergency, right? Because it sounds worse.
Worse, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Now they talk not if there is a pandemic, but when there's the next pandemic, right? It's a given that there's going to be another pandemic. Then they talk about cyber pandemics. Then they talk about, you know, illegal immigration. It's one thing after the other, 24/7 in mainstream media. There is always a reason why we should be panicking, right? Which makes people's brains just shut off. They can't take it. It's a normal consequence of that. And then, of course, they can't think critically. So of course, they'll just do whatever they are told. You know, there's information overload most of the time anyway.
And that's why it's so important, I think, that people turn off mainstream media, just get away from it. And it's healthy, I think, if those people, they come to people like yourself and to the whole spectrum we have now of alternative voices who will provide, balanced and important information. I noticed during COVID, it was really obvious to me very quickly, the people who watch the media the most, you know, watch their BBC and all that stuff, Laura, here in the UK, they just became hypnotized by it. You know, you could see how the control matrix got them. And once some of them went into it, I mean, there's people still, I saw people the other day in a cafe I walked in, there was two, they had masks on. I'm thinking, why? And then I thought, I feel a bit bad for them because I think they've been completely, they've fallen right down into it. And I don't think there's a way back out because they completely bought everything, you know, scary virus. Shows you the power of the mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah, it is sad to watch that level of mind control, brainwashing, really. It is sad.
It is, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we were all victims of that, you know, indoctrination and manipulation and deceit 24/7 in the news. We've all been victims of that. Yep. Some of us could see it coming because maybe we were awake earlier on. Some of us, for whatever the reasons, our instinct, our intuition, I think had a lot to do with it. Yes. And we're like, it just doesn't sound right. This doesn't look good. This doesn't make sense. Because at the end of the day, most of the things that they were saying didn't really make any sense. If you actually took the time to think with some common sense, you could have come to the conclusion, this makes no sense to me, right? But people were so fearful at the time, they couldn't even do that exercise. So yes, they were all victims. And unfortunately, we still see some casualties from that. People that are still wearing masks when you think, you know, I thought you'd realize that all of this was a lot of manipulation and a lot of noise about nothing, really, because what people seem to forget is that the virus, if, you know, and then that obviously there's that discussion, was there really a virus or not? I'm not going to get into that. But if there was a virus, what we were told, and it seems to be true, is that most people, 99.7%, survived it. So why were we freaking about? Let's forget that is a fact. I'm not inventing it, right? That in itself tells you how much people were completely manipulated by the media machine, that they were still freaking out and still willing to take an experimental jab because there was a virus, even though 99.7% of the population were okay.
Yeah, but don't you think, Laura, it's you know, on the whole climate emergency issue, it's very similar. You know, we all have to be really scared because of all the CO2 that we're emitting into the atmosphere. And I think I did see you referencing a quote on that. I mean, the human contribution to CO2, which is a good gas anyway, a gas of life, we need more of it, not less, actually. It's so tiny. And yet it's the same trick that they're trying to play, really, isn't it? You know, for this tiny, infinitesimally small sort of increase in CO2, we've got to basically bring us back to the Stone Age. So it's amazing the way these people operate.
Yeah, what is amazing is to see how effective this matrix has been, that they can convince us of the most ludicrous stuff, of things that are like we were talking about gender ideology. Like we're talking about now the climate crisis. The definition of climate is change. It changed from the beginning. It's always changing. It will always change. Now, the point is, are we as humans contributing to the change? The answer is no. Because if the argument is that we are emitting CO2 and the CO2 levels, and you then ask, well, how much is CO2 in the atmosphere? And you find out that it's only 0.04%.
Yeah.
And you go, hold on a minute, say that again, right? Yes, 0.04%. And how much are we contributing to that? Oh, 3% of 0.04. Is that, are we mad? What are we talking about? What are we doing? Why are they making us kill cows? Why are they telling us we can't do this and we can't do that based on what?
Yeah, but that's right. On the basis of that, they want to, again, it's another power control, isn't it? I mean, they want to essentially wipe out agriculture, as far as I can see. And you look at Holland and some of these other countries where at least the farmers seem to have begun to rise up against them. But I mean, you know, if they got their way using this climate nonsense, like you could end up with mass global starvation, which... Yeah. Maybe is what they want. I don't know.
Well, I, you know, again, this is another piece of the puzzle that fits into creating this one world technocracy, totalitarian technocracy.
Yeah.
You know, they are trying to destroy our historic forms of farming because they want the food supply to be in the hands of big corporations, part of this technocratic platform that will sort of top-down rule the world. And that's what we're seeing as we speak. They're coming at the farmers around the world because they want to be able to control the food supply. It's all about control. Transhumanism is about controlling us. The war against the farmers is about controlling the food.
Yeah.
You know, everything that we're seeing is about control, control, control. The depopulation agendas to make their life more easy, less people, more easy to control, right?
Yeah.
So it all fits into the same thing. This is why it's so important that people finally wake up to what is it that they're trying to achieve. It's not so much about getting boiled down into what is happening, this and this and this and this. It's about where are all of these things leading to? Because once you recognize that end goal, once you recognize where they want us to end, you can start taking steps in the different direction, right? You know, don't accept CBDCs because that's leading there. Don't accept, you know, vaccine passports because it's leading there. Don't accept transhumanism or having your genetic composition be, you know, altered in any way, shape or form because it's leading us there, right?
Yeah.
But you need to understand what the final goal is before you can actually make better choices.
I get that. Well, tell me this then. Do you think artificial intelligence, AI, is that leading us towards the end goal as well? Because I don't know about you, but I felt instinctively uncomfortable with AI, you know, in terms of the different systems you can use. I don't really care for AI. I've got a brain. I can use my brain. I can talk to other people. I think it's subversive. What do you think AI is about, Laura?
I share your feelings towards AI. I don't use it. I find it like I don't want to interact with it. I know a lot of people do. I'm not saying that all of it is bad. I think AI could be used. Listen, technology in general, it all depends in whose hands it
is. Yeah, it does.
You know, it's a double-edged sword, you know, or a double-edged knife. You can cut it. You can use it to cut bread and there's nothing wrong with that. Or you can use it to kill someone and there's everything wrong with it, right?
Yeah.
So there might be a place in the future for AI in assisting humanity. But at the moment, AI is probably in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find very interesting about AI is that I think it fits into this psychological push to make us feel inadequate, to make us feel, in the words of Yuval Noah Harari, useless, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly, we've been flooded by this notion that AI is so much better than we are, that it can do all of these things that we can't, to make us feel like, oh, maybe I'm not going to be able to access the workspace unless I adopt technology within me. Maybe I'm never going to be able to be good enough, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
To survive the future unless I also implant technology in whatever shape or form. So I think there's a psychological component to what we're seeing at the moment.
Mm.
And I like to remind people that AI stands for artificial intelligence because it is artificial. It is artificial. Real intelligence necessitates of consciousness, and that's something machines will never have. That's something we have. You know, real intelligence is when you're also connected to to the divine, to something greater than you are. That's mm-hmm. when inspiration comes. That's where creativity comes, right? Yes,
I agree.
At the end of the day, AI is made up of a lot of the things that we have, as humans, have already said or written or sung or painted. You know, it's just gathering everything that we as humans may have produced. And yes, synthesizing it and having all of these, you know, large spaces of memory that maybe we don't have in our own brains. But let's not be fooled. They will never be able to match a human brain, never. We are the most sophisticated biological pieces of machinery on this planet.
Well, we are. But as you say, they deny the fact that we have a consciousness. They deny the fact we've got a soul. I mean, again, back to the very start of this conversation, the things that are most important about us humans, they deny it because they don't want us to be and stay what we are. That is surely another thing about AI. I did laugh at the fact that, who is it? Is it Google, their AI system? Did you see it come out there a couple of weeks ago? And it came out with, it had been programmed in such a way that, you know, it, show me a pope, and it was a black pope, or show me, it was obviously programmed by a bunch of woke lunatics. Yeah, and so as you say, I mean, ultimately, AI can never, I don't think it can ever match us because of the spark, the divine spark we have within us. That's what I think anyway.
I agree with you entirely, but I think the problem is that there is already, as I see it, an epidemic in society where people don't feel like they are enough. And if you talk to psychologists and psychiatrists, they will tell you that the biggest thing when they see clients, when they see patients, is like people don't feel like they're enough. You know, there's this sense of lack of fulfillment somehow, or lack of purpose, you know, which is to do with a lot of the conditioning that's been going on in society. There's a loss of moral values. There's a loss of direction. There's a lot of loss of principles and righteousness. And this feeds into you not feeling very proud of yourself. You don't start feeling very confident about who you are when you're lost that way, right? And so there is this very psychological component as well that needs to be taken into account of people not feeling enough, and therefore seeking to feel better in that way in the wrong ways. And technology is one of those ways that makes people think, oh, maybe I can become something else that's cooler than what I am.
Although one of the, again, another worrying aspect to AI is the fact that, I mean, you do hear people like Musk and others sort of talking about there may well come a time when we don't even have to work, Laura. The AI is going to do it all for us. We can just sit at home, watch TV or whatever, and that's all we have to do. I mean, how destructive and nihilistic is that?
Very, very, very destructive. I don't subscribe to that idea. I think that we were created in the image of God, and so we are creators ourselves. Yep. And so there's this incredible potential within us to create things, to imagine things, to do all of these wonderful things. I think the problem is that we have been so convinced that we are powerless and useless and, you know, and violent and conflicted. Yep. No, let's, you know, when you see a newborn baby and congratulations to you for your granddaughter, you know, it's a miracle. And you see this pure, wonderful bundle of love. That's how we all start, right? Let's not forget that. And let's not forget our potential. And let's not forget our capacity for love and our capacity for good and our capacity for sharing, right? We need to get back to who we are as humans and remind ourselves that we are powerful and not be dragged into this conviction that they're trying to push towards us, that we're less, that we're half-baked, that we're work in progress, that we're just a sack of meat. You know, talk about yourself, right?
But you know, again, we are absolutely what you say we are. And one of the things about the lockdown period, now I gotta say, I completely ignored the lockdown. I was never going to be kept away from the people I love ever by any power. But a lot of people did stay away from the people that they love, and that was really distressing to see that. But one of the things that I figured after we eventually emerged from that was that there's a real need as human beings, Laura. We thrive in each other's company, and ideally, so for the last sort of 6 months, I've started to put on live shows in London, for example, discussing these issues. But my main reason for doing that was you bring a couple hundred people together in a room. It's an amazing vibe of common humanity, warmth, humor, intelligence. You know, it's brilliant. And again, I think they must hate that. They hate the notion that, oh, they're actually wanting to get together, because, of course, revolutions also start when people get together, which would not be terrible. So that human, I mean, as you say, we are so much more than what they say. And that's why, you know, transhumanism is really surely just an attempt to destroy humanity and replace it with this techno surrogate, which we should absolutely reject.
Exactly. You know, it is all about control at the end of the day. They don't want to make us better. They don't want to make us superhumans, even though that's how they're trying to sell it to us, or human 2.0. What they want us is to be controllable by them so that they make their lives a hell of a lot easier. You know, there's a lot of time, money, and people dedicated to controlling this matrix that is steering us in whatever direction they need us to go. It takes a huge amount of resources, because it's all about catching our perception, controlling our perception so that we may act as they wish us to act, right? There's a lot that goes into it. But if they can somehow either alter us genetically or implant something within us that we become, again, one more thing in this Internet of Things, or Internet of Bodies, as they call it, well, then their life will be a hell of a lot easier, which is what they want. We will then fit really nicely into this digitalized matrix, part of this one world totalitarian technocracy. That's their plan, you know, make their life easier. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, do you think, I mean, the scary thing about the COVID, you know, gene therapy or whatever they call it. And by the way, earlier on, you talked about, you know, the whole issue of the virus. I don't believe the virus. There was a virus, just putting it out there. I don't think, I used to, now I don't, I've gone completely terrain. but regardless of any, whether it was a virus or not, it's kind of not to the point. The point is, billions of people presumably have taken these injections, this treatment. And we can't be sure what that does to those people over time, you know. So a big chunk of humanity did surrender themselves over, Laura, which I find really dispiriting that so many did. I hope there would have been a bigger resistance. But as you say, I think our numbers are growing as well now the other way. So maybe it'll work out.
Yes, it's a sad reality that so many people fell for the PSYOP. And, you know, in defense to them, I do feel they were victims of what we were talking about earlier, this constant 24/7 feeding of fear, you know. And also, don't forget, it was brutal. You know, at one point, I was not even able to walk into a restaurant because I didn't have my vaccine passport, right? Yep. So it was a very, very radical, very brutal campaign to force people. I mean, even to the point that they were losing their jobs. Now, I get it. Yep. You got to feed your family. You know, there comes a point you've got to make a choice. So we need to understand how much pressure people were put under.
Agreed. Yeah.
But it is a sad reality, because at the end of the day, this was an untested experimental injection. Yeah. And so not only do we not know the short-term effects, well, we now know how many people are suffering from it in all sorts of ways, and death is one of them, obviously, but also long-term, you know. I think depopulation is a part of that. Unfortunately, we have seen already a huge decline in births and in women being able to actually have full pregnancies. Yes. So this is a very, very sad reality of the point that we're at the moment. I try always on my channel to inform people about protocols that they can do. They can take natural remedies to try and alleviate symptoms, or to try and get rid of the spike protein. Yes. All of these things, that anything that can help, I think it is worth research, and I would encourage people to do that. There's always something that can be done. I don't want people that have been vaccinated to feel like I'm doomed. I think that there are things that you can do to make it better. But the most important thing is do not take any more, right? That's number one. No boosters.
No boosters. No, no, no. If you are on your 8th or 9th jab, honestly, at that point, you are beyond salvation. But there's a lot of people, I would say probably the majority of people who did take the jabs at the beginning, after about the second one, maybe the third one, they then stopped. I have immediate family members who, against my wishes, took the jabs. And that's their decision, and you know that's such is life. But they never went beyond the third one. And as you say, Laura, and I think it's important that we do send a positive message to people as well. You know, you're not doomed if you've taken two or three of these things. You know, there's things that you can do. There's protocols. Yeah. There's hope, and I think we have to give people hope because as you say, the transhumanists thrive on despair. And isolation, and we want to be the opposite of that.
Absolutely. And this is what I have always tried to do when I write and on my channel. I put a lot of information out there, and a lot of the things that are happening, unfortunately, are worrying and are slightly, you know, frightening, very concerning to say the least. But I always try to balance it out with giving people the motivation, the inspiration of understanding that we can change things around, that at the end of the day, there's many of us and very few of them, and that all it's going to take is for us to wake up and say, not anymore. I'm not complying. I'm not taking this. No, I'm not doing that. No, I don't believe you, right? If a critical mass of people get to that point, humanity stands a very, very high chance of turning things around. And I think that it is our role in the alternative media, and thank goodness we've grown. Like I was looking at some statistics of, you know, mainstream media and how they're losing viewers by the minute, right? Whereas alternative media is just going up and up and up in numbers. Yeah. And this is a very positive indication that people are seeking answers and that they've realized that they're not going to find the truth in mainstream media. This is vital. It's vital for our fight. It's vital for us be able to get to that critical mass of people that will actually stand up and say, not anymore, right? Don't count with me.
Yeah. Now, the growth in the alternative media has been astounding and so inspiring to see, Laura, because that's one of the areas where hope really does lie, I think, because by waking more and more people up collectively, I think we are definitely challenging, because the transhumanists, the people at the top of all of this, and we'll not go into who they specifically might be, because it's, I think I've heard, doesn't really help.
It would take forever as well.
It would take forever, but the thing is, there's not that many of them. Maybe this is the more important point. There's not that many of them, and there's an awful lot of us. So that's a good starting point, isn't it? We basically outnumber them.
We win in numbers, and we win in unity, and this is the reason why they are always trying to keep us divided.
Yes.
Whether it's by race or religion or gender or whatever the case may be, it's divide and conquer. This is another thing that they use all the time. It's the fear, it's the divide and conquer, it's the putting us down to make us believe that we're less than we are, less powerful, that our bodies cannot heal themselves, that without them we are nothing, that we need saving, that we need protection. None of that is true. What humanity needs to really wake up to is to who we are and how powerful we are, and that we have these wonderful bodies that are actually capable of self-healing with the right nutrition.
Yep.
Of course, we live in a toxic world where they put fluoride in our water, where the food we eat is GMO, where we're being injected from birth with all sorts of vaccines and heavy metals that come with them, right? So it's very difficult for our bodies to actually be able to function as it was created to function, because it's like you feeding diesel to your petrol car or vice versa. It's not going to work. It's not going to work very well. But I think this is the most important thing. Humanity needs to wake up to ourselves, to who we are, to why we are here, to how powerful we are, and to the fact that, no, we're not sacks of meat. We're wonderful organic beings with an immortal soul. Yes. That's what's very important for people to really embrace. That's when fear goes away, David. That's when you realize, you know what? I can handle anything because now I know who I am.
Well, that was the thing about the beginning of COVID that really struck me as being strange. I took a view back then. Well, look, I have an absolute faith in what comes after this life. I'm very confident in that. So I'm not going to be scared. I refuse to be afraid, especially of, you know, of phantoms that are just being conjured up by very bad people. So you're right. But then again, going back to yesterday, I thought, well, here it is. You know, Easter Sunday, the day of the resurrection, the most important day for Christians in the world anyway. And they're pushing transgender. And I don't think that was coincidence. You know, I think that's how hateful these transhumanist monsters are, isn't it, really? They're absolute. They do everything they can, but they'll never win.
No, I don't believe. I believe that they won't. But yes, that's how they provoke division. And that's how they provoke us for a response to that. These people are satanic. They really are.
They are. Yep.
The devil's greatest trick was to convince humanity that he didn't exist, but he does. He's always been there. He always, well, hopefully not always will be there, but he's definitely always been around. And these people have been captured by evil. They're evil. Mm. Their agenda is evil. It's an anti-human agenda because humanity is God's creation and they want to destroy everything that God created. This is why their intent is to create a synthetic universe, a synthetic human, a synthetic everything. Because what is organic and what is God created is everything that they want to destroy.
You know, I was in a big electrical store the other day, and they sell all kinds of tech stuff. And I walked past one little display they had, and I think I'm not sure what the name is. Is it Meta Goggles? It's, you know, the goggles that you put on, and they had you descend into, well, I don't know where you descend, but they had this sign above it, you know, explore the world. And go into the goggles. And I'm thinking, you know, I think that's satanic because we've got there's an amazing world out the window, beautiful world we live in, and we can all explore it anytime we want. Imagine the cynicism of inventing this parallel metaverse that you descend into to keep Facebook or Meta or whoever it is happy. I mean, I thought to myself, that's pretty malevolent when you think about it.
It's extremely malevolent, but they're not, you know, the curious thing, and some people that might hear us talk right now in this conversation might think, oh my God, what a pair of conspiracy theorists. And you think, no, hold on a minute. Everything that we've said, actually, you can look it up.
Yeah.
And to the point that you were just making, Yuval Noah Harari, who's one of the main counselors to Klaus Schwab and the WEF, he speaks about those of us that will not comply to this transhumanist agenda. He calls us the useless class. We will become the useless class. And then he says that, oh, we'll just have to give them video games and drugs.
Yeah, he did. Yep, you did, right?
So I'm not inventing this. I am not inventing the things that I'm saying. In the same way that Klaus Schwab stood in front of Davos, I believe, last year, and he said the future of the world depends on the people in this room. So when we talk about the globalists really feeling that they control the world and wanting to create this global totalitarian technocracy, we're not inventing any of it. They speak in these terms. They're quite open about it.
They are. Yeah.
So, you know, and then you've got them saying that human rights are fiction. This is the next thing. And I found that really interesting when I heard Yuval Noah Harari recently start saying that human rights are fiction, because that's the next step towards transhumanism. If you convince us that we have no human rights per se, not any God-given, right, human rights.
Yeah.
Then it becomes easy to trespass that into the realm of genetically modifying us to the point that we might be patentable by those that have just modified.
Yeah.
In the same way that if you genetically modified an animal or genetically modify a plant, those animals and those plants are patentable by the laboratory, the big tech company that did it, right? So they're now psychologically trying to convince us that human rights are fiction. It's like, honestly, like you say, sometimes it's laughable. I think sometimes we just have to laugh because it's ridiculous.
I think laughing at them is quite healthy because I think laughter is helpful and it's helpful to us human beings. And it shows our contempt for them and it shows our resistance to them. And, you know, in the final analysis, Laura, when all is said and done, I do believe that this strong essence we have within us, that the God spark that lies within every one of us, is ultimately going to prevail over these wicked people, you know. And I do think they're Satanists, by the way. I do think they are. And but we have to stand against them, you know. So, Laura, listen, our hour's gone by very quickly, as I knew it would do. But can I thank you so much for coming on the stream and talking to my audience. People can find you, Laura. I know you're on now. I've got your Twitter handle up here on, should I call it X or Twitter? I'm not sure what's
yeah.
Whatever. You got, and obviously you're on Telegram as well. And where else can we find you? I think Instagram, are you on?
Instagram, yes, it's Laura Avoli Official. Telegram is Laura Avoli Channel, and X is Laura Avoli _X.
Well, can I recommend everyone, please, if you're not already doing it, please follow Laura, support Laura. We in this alternative realm that we inhabit must support each other and stand together. But listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Laura, thank you so much for this evening, and catch up with everyone later on during the week. That's it. Bye-bye.